Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are looking at what should have been, well, a complete non-issue. Mm-hmm. A simple question about a school fee policy that just spiraled. We're at a high school senior night football game, October 31st, 2025.
And a parent, Cindy Berger, asks this question and ends up being removed by police.
Removed by police and then handed a six-month ban from all Shawnee Public Schools property.
It's an extraordinary outcome, and our mission today is to do a deep dive into the official record to see how on earth we got here. We've gone through the school board hearing transcripts, the whole case file, really.
Yeah.
We're looking at the factual contradictions, the failures in due process, and basically the administration's justification for such an extreme punishment.
And the sources we have are fantastic for this. Mm-hmm. We have direct testimony from the administrators, internal memos, and this really detailed contradiction matrix that just lays it all out and lets us see what really happened.
Or at least what the documents say happened.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this. The setting is senior night at Avitas Plaza, the SPS football stadium. Cindy Berger, the parent, she walks up to an administrator, Michelle Wallace, who's working a registration table for a little kid's costume contest.
And the interaction starts with this policy question. This is the trigger for everything that follows.
What was the question?
It was simple. Why do parents have to pay the entry fee when their own kids are participating in senior night? It's a legitimate question, you know? She's just looking for clarification.
And right here, this is where the whole administrative story starts to fall apart, because the very first fact, how long this conversation even lasted, is the core contradiction.
It's the absolute foundation of their case. The administration's entire claim of a sustained disruption hinges on this.
So what are the two versions?
Okay, so Cindy Berger and her husband, John, they both say consistently that the whole thing was over in like 15 to 20 seconds.
15 seconds.
Tops. But the administrator, Michelle Wallace, she claims in her statement that it lasted 3 to 5 minutes.
Whoa. That's not a small discrepancy. That's a massive difference.
It's a necessary inflation. You can't call the police over a 15-second question, but 3 to 5 minutes of arguing, that's a different story.
And what's really wild is how the superintendent, Dr. Jason James, he sort of cements this inflated timeline during the appeal hearing.
Oh, absolutely. He testified that his total involvement from getting the call to telling Cindy to leave was about 3 minutes total.
And he presents that 3 minutes as the length of the disruption itself.
Right. But the transcripts give us the details, and that's where it gets so interesting.
Because he wasn't even there when it started.
Not even close. He admits under questioning he was all the way across the stadium. He was in the locker room, and I'm quoting here, talking about the good old days with the opposing team's coach.
You're kidding.
No. So he gets a call, has to walk across the stadium, then he has to wait for a cop to come unlock a gate to even get to where they are.
So his walking time. His waiting for a key time.
And the time it took to wrap up his chat in the locker room, all of that gets bundled together and presented to the school board as the disruption that Cindy Berger caused.
That is a staggering logical leap.
It is. It shows the goal wasn't to report the facts. The goal was to build a case for that sustained disruption language to justify the ban.
Okay, so let's shift to how this even became a confrontation in the first place. The sources seem to point to the administrator, Michelle Wallace, as the one who escalated it.
The administration's own files confirm this. This isn't just Cindy's version. Wallace herself admitted in her official statement what she said.
And what was that?
After Cindy asked the question about the fee policy, Wallace's response was, "Are you ever happy?"
Wow. Yeah. A sarcastic personal remark, not a policy explanation. That's the documented provocation.
So an administrator attacks a parent's character for asking a question about money.
And despite that, the administration sends Cindy a six-month ban letter on November 7th. And the justifications are, you know, the usual buzzwords, aggressive behavior, verbal abuse, sustained disruption.
And safety concerns.
Right, safety concerns. But what evidence did they actually have for any of that?
That's the thing. When you look at the file, it's not there. Not a single staff statement mentions profanity. No one documented a threat, no aggressive physical action.
So what did they document?
Just the question and the administrator's sarcastic reply. Cindy and her husband both maintained she just left peacefully as soon as she was told to.
So why were the police even there? If there was no crime, no real threat.
Their role was purely administrative. They were called after Superintendent James got there and made the decision to remove her. The officer didn't witness a crime.
So the police were just there to enforce the superintendent's order.
Exactly. They were used to legitimize this idea of a safety concern where the record shows none existed.
It really feels like they decided on the punishment first and then worked backwards to justify it.
Which brings us to the next section, where the whole narrative just, it completely unravels. The comparative statement matrix really highlights the fabrications.
Let's start with the one I just can't get my head around. The three opportunities claim.
Oh, this one is something else. Superintendent James claimed that in that tiny window of time, he offered Cindy Berger three separate opportunities to schedule a private meeting with him.
Three.
Three distinct offers to discuss her policy concerns.
In an interaction that the Bergers say lasted 20 seconds total, how is that physically possible? He was walking across the stadium for most of it.
It's not possible, and no other witness backs him up on this. Not Wallace, not the other administrator, Noble. No one else heard these three offers. It's a narrative device.
To make it sound like they tried to de-escalate.
Precisely. When it seems they went straight to the nuclear option.
Okay, but the biggest procedural failure has to be this surveillance video.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, this is the one piece of evidence that could settle everything. The 15 seconds versus 5 minutes debate. The video would show it.
And Cindy asked for it.
Man, repeatedly. It was never provided to her. But here's the kicker. The Board of Education. They didn't review it either during her appeal.
Wait, the board, the people who are supposed to be the final judge here, they didn't even look at the tape.
They actively chose not to. Why would you ignore the only piece of objective evidence you have?
Unless you suspect it doesn't support your story.
It strongly suggests they knew the video would contradict the sustained disruption narrative. By keeping it hidden, they protected the story. It's a complete failure of due process.
And then it gets even more theatrical with the fleeing grandmother story.
Yes. The superintendent's anecdote, he claimed that in the middle of all this, he saw a grandma and her grandchild scoop him up and just turn and immediately walk out of the stadium.
To imply that people were terrified of this woman asking about ticket prices.
Exactly. Pure narrative engineering to create a sense of fear and chaos.
And was this dramatic scene corroborated by any of the other three witnesses who were standing right there?
Not a single one. Not Cindy, not her husband, not Wallace, not Noble. It's an uncorroborated claim that appears to be invented to justify the safety concerns language.
On top of all this, you've got a massive conflict of interest.
A huge one. Superintendent James is the one who initiates the removal. He writes the ban letter. He's the main witness against her. And then he's the chief official defending that decision in the appeal.
So he's the accuser, witness, and judge.
Essentially, yes. It violates any sense of impartiality. His subjective and, as we've seen, often uncorroborated version of events was just accepted as fact by the board.
And just to top it all off, they bring up balloons.
The balloon incident, it's almost comical. To show a pattern of dissatisfaction, James brought up that earlier in the evening, Cindy tried to bring balloons into the stadium.
And what happened?
She was told they weren't allowed, so she immediately complied and took them back to her car.
So they used an example of her complying with a policy as evidence of her being a troublemaker.
That's exactly right. It shows how desperate they were to find anything, anything at all, to prop up a punishment that was already decided.
Okay, let's move to the appeal hearing itself. November 20th, 2025. This is Cindy Berger's one chance to make her case to the Board of Education.
And right away, there are governance issues. The records show two board members were absent.
So less oversight.
Less oversight for a major decision about a parent's rights. The accountability is already diluted before it even starts.
Yeah, but there was one board member, Turner Bass, who seemed to see the problems with the administration's story.
Yes, Turner Bass was the voice of dissent here. He made a motion to amend the ban from 6 months down to 2 months.
And his reasoning?
It was simple, direct logic. He said that a 15 or 20 second interaction, even if it was tense, just isn't a sustained disruption that warrants a 6 month ban.
That feels like a moment of sanity, a chance for the board to check this overreach. So what happened to his motion?
It failed for lack of a second.
Nobody else on the board would even second it for a discussion.
Nope. It died on the floor. It showed that the rest of the board was just not willing to question the superintendent's recommendation, no matter how shaky the evidence was.
And the final vote.
They voted to uphold the full 6 month ban. Four votes in favor, with only Turner Bass voting no.
So let's talk about that proportionality. A 6 month ban. How does that compare to other cases?
It's documented as grossly disproportionate. Bans like this at SPS are typically reserved for things like physical assault, verified threats against students, or, you know, repeated severe misconduct.
None of which happened here.
None of it. Oh. The punishment seems to be entirely tied to the content of her speech, asking an uncomfortable question about money, not about any actual threat to anyone's safety.
So to sum this all up for you, the listener, we have what was, by one account, a 15-second disagreement, started by an administrator's unprofessional, sarcastic remark.
Right.
That incident was then blown up by administrative exaggeration, counting a walk across a football field as part of the disruption.
Then it was defended with claims that are completely unsupported, like the three meeting offers and the fleeing grandma.
And the whole time, they refused to release the one piece of evidence, the surveillance video, that could have proven the truth.
And if you connect this back to the bigger picture, this case just screams about the need for real due process and, frankly, independent board oversight.
Mm-hmm.
When an administration can act as its own accuser, investigator, and judge, and when its story has this many internal contradictions, the whole system just fails.
So here's a final thought for you to walk away with. If a parent can be removed from a football game by police and then banned from all school property for half a year, simply for asking an unwelcome question about fees, what does that mean? What precedent does that set for other parents who want to demand accountability from their public schools?
It suggests that sometimes just asking a question can come at an unacceptably high price.